Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, content manager at the Institute, and in this podcast, we will be looking at news from the week beginning the 4th of August. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, head of research, policy and standards at the Institute. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Our first story looks at parental leave, and according to new Ipsos Maori figures seen by The Guardian, compiled from a poll of 1,119 adults, the research shows that almost a third of women think that taking maternity leave has had a negative impact on their careers. But when it comes to paternity leave, only 13% of men feel the same way. Meanwhile, 45% of both parents and non-parents agreed with the statement, taking time off work to care for a child has a negative impact on a person's job. Kate, this research seems to suggest that firms still have a long way to go to make parental leave work for women. What should leaders learn from these figures?
I was a bit surprised, actually, that only 29% of women think that taking maternity leave had an adverse impact on their careers, because when you look at earnings, their earnings of mothers significantly fall after or in compared to men. So I think the problem perhaps is even greater. But what we do wrong is look at parental leave as being either or and not recognise that parenting is a two-person job. Currently, either parent can choose to share the leave, but it's a zero sum. So if somebody takes it, the mother takes it, the father can't, and vice versa. A solution for organisations is to stop looking at part-time work, full-time work, and to actually look at work, look at the jobs that need doing, and not associate people with jobs. What is the work? What needs to be delivered? How can we manage that and not be trapped in ideas of 37 and a half hours or fewer than that? And just think about what we need, the best talent for the job. And that way, this discrepancies will begin to be eroded. Similarly, if we look at our leave policy, and that has to be done at a government level and to be more like the Scandinavian model, where it's recognised that both parents are entitled to time off and they shouldn't be sharing it the way we've constructed it in the UK.
Thank you very much, Kate. Our next story looks at new research from the CIPD. In its latest report, Megatrends, is work really becoming more insecure? The research states that the UK's share of non-permanent work, covering self-employed and temporary workers, including temporary zero-hours contract staff, has not increased from its 1998 level of 20%. Based on an analysis of data from a range of sources, including the Office for National Statistics, the report also shows that most people in atypical employment, whether self-employed, working in the digital gig economy or on 0 hours contract, actually choose to work in this way and are broadly satisfied. This suggests that more attention should be paid by policymakers and employers on improving job quality and workplace productivity across the economy to tackle problems such as low pay and discrimination, not simply on improving the rights and security of atypical workers, important though this is. Kate, do you believe that the CIPD is correct with its assessment of the figures?
Well, it's difficult to argue with statistics that are based on such reputable sources. But rather like the previous thing, when we're looking at part-time work and full-time work and women in work and men in work, if we started thinking about work that is intrinsically satisfying, that is fairly rewarded, where you're managed in a way that recognises that you have work-life balance needs and you also have needs to develop, we wouldn't be obsessing about the sort of employment contract, because the contractual relationship, although it contributes, of course, to the relationship, isn't solely what it's about. It's much more about the relationship, how you're managed, the level of trust, whether you believe in the organisation that you're working for, whatever the contract is. And we should be thinking much more, as Matthew Taylor's Good Work Report says, about creating great work for people that they enjoy, that they are rewarded, and that they feel a sense of satisfaction from.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is taken from the Korn Ferry Institute and looks at the EU's reliance on older workers. The article suggests that while all firms experience challenges in developing leaders, European organisations have an even more fundamental problem, which is hiring younger workers in the first place. The Eurozone created 10 million jobs between 2012 and 2018, and 85% of them went to people aged between 55 through to 74, according to the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development. The problem, some experts say, is that there are only so many younger Europeans with the training skills and workplace know-how that employers want. If you have everyone trying to hire the same people, you get a shortage, says Yannick Binvel, president of Korn Ferry's Global Industries Markets Practice. So you go where the people are. If they are in the 50s, that is okay.
I don't know how Yannick Binvel is, but it's very nice of him to say that people in their 50s can still contribute to the workforce. And of course, that's what we found out when we undertook some research in this area 2 or 3 years ago. If there aren't enough young people to go round, then of course we'll start employing older people. Interesting commentary here on their lack of skills. Again, this is something that we found when we did the multi-generational research, was that although skills requirement changes and you can upskill people and send them on training courses, what you get from working in organisations for a number of years is understanding how organisations operate. You become better at managing the relationships with your colleagues and your managers. All of that capability is truly transferable. So maybe recruitment managers are saying here, well, we'd rather go for the people that we can skill, upskill with the skills that they need immediately and draw on that experience because that enriches the organisation. But rather like the previous piece, Rod, it does seem as though we're hearing things as sort of common sense or anecdotally that are being challenged by much bigger research studies. So there is obviously a big difference between what's happening at a macro and overall, you know, at national and international level compared to what's happening in particular industries and sectors. So it's really one that I think needs a much more in-depth research into what is happening where, rather than these rather aggregate figures that are interesting to talk about but aren't really telling us very much to help with the daily practice of recruitment and managing.
Thank you, Kate. Our next and final story is taken from the Harvard Business Review. And this research shows for the first time that the implicit attitudes of a society can and do change durably over time, although at different rates and in different directions, depending on the issue. Drawing on data from over 4 million tests of explicit and implicit attitudes collected between 2007 and 2016, the research found that Americans' implicit attitudes about sexual orientation, race, and skin tone have all decreased meaningfully in bias over the past decade. However, we also found in some areas, age, disability, and body weight, the news is not so positive. The article suggests this is good news for business leaders, since greater diversity has many benefits for organizations. For example, it allows the best talent to emerge, makes teams smarter, and improves financial performance. Kate, does this research indeed suggest that we are becoming more tolerant?
It does. But it also suggests that it's a relatively slow process and that attitudes do change over time. We become more tolerant, more understanding of people that we were less understanding of previously. And as you've already said, that's great news for the workforce. But what it doesn't mean is that we can ignore the fact that there are underrepresented groups and that many organisations are not inclusive places. They don't have diverse workforces, and real action has to be taken in order to accelerate what seems to be societal changes. And we can't just wait, as sometimes people argue, for the gender pay gap. Well, eventually it will fix itself. Many of these things might fix themselves because the driver will be a scarcity of talent. But that's not a great place for an organisation to be, to just say, oh, well, we'll wait and let's see what happens. Be much more proactive and know that there are benefits from being diverse. And in order to do that, you have to be inclusive.
Thank you very much, Kate, and let's hope the Institute is at the forefront in leading these changes. This concludes this week's episode, and listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.